Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, Donald
and David.
This week, we are discussing TV, movies, and books with metaphysical and spiritual themes. And David, I'm going to let you start off and kind of give us your take on pop culture, if you will, with spiritual themes.
Well, let's start with movies, actually. There's a few that really resonate with me. One of the biggest ones I've been so fascinated by as of late, and I mentioned this in one of our other podcasts, is The Matrix.
Mm-hmm. Our namesake.
Our namesake, exactly. I know that probably surprises a lot of people. Really, Matrix? Take the red pill? Come on. I think it's one of the most beautiful analogies as far as the perception of reality. Mm-hmm. I say that because of the idea with Neo being able to see, you know, all the glyphs, everything in kind of that Matrix code. I use that as analogous to the Matrix code being the energy field. Oh. That we are living in this energy field, and we basically can manipulate that energy field if we understand the reality. And I would say that Neo is, to me, an analogous to an ascended master, like Jesus or Buddha or one of those. That was kind of a beautiful movie for that. I'm really becoming less and less of a fan of the dystopian themes, which that is one of, because I'm a little bit more optimistic of our outcome as a species going into the future. Nonetheless, I really liked what the Wachowski brothers did with that and incorporating a lot of spiritual and metaphysical elements into that movie.
Oh, I agree totally. That was the one and only movie to date where I actually went and saw it in the theater multiple times. First, I went to see it, and then I was like, wow, this is just an awesome movie. Then in discussion with other people, they were like, oh, I've been meaning to see that. Let's go. Half an hour later, we're at the movie theater watching it again. That just happened over and over again. And it came to a point where within a week, I think I saw it like 4 or 5 times.
What made you go so repeatedly? I mean, was there more than just a love for the movie, or was there something really compelling that you were trying to find in it?
I think what it was, I found the story amazing, and I wanted to share the experience with people that I was socializing with at the time. To me, it was one of those that started to really shift my perception a little bit of what was possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole idea of the Matrix is if you're in the Matrix and you've always been in the Matrix, there are only certain things that you believe that you can do. But once you get out of the Matrix and you realize that you're going back in and it's not quote unquote real per se, you realize that you can actually do things like jump 10 feet in the air and dodge bullets and things like that. And I think it was that contrast of being the fish in water and, you know, someone saying, how is the water down there? And not being able to say, what do you mean? And being a fish that has gone outside of water, like, this water's good, this water's bad, and if I go this way, I can actually change my reality just a little bit, you know, tweak it just a bit so that I experience this other type of experience.
Well, the one thing that I don't prescribe to with the Matrix as far as the separation of one reality from another, to the reality within the reality, is that I never want to take away our physical reality as a valid experience. Which the Matrix, what that alludes to is that's not the real world, that this is, it's an illusion. I do believe that there's a degree to an illusion. I think there's a world beyond the world we're living in, but I don't want to say that this world is simply an illusion. I think this world is more like a dream than an illusion, but it's a very real dream. I know that sounds contradictory, but...
Oh, no. Makes perfect sense to me. One of the monikers that I heard long, long time ago is, are we the dreamer or are we the dreamed?
Right.
You know, are we dreaming ourselves into this life, or is our life dreaming ourselves of another type of life?
All of the above. I would check that box, which is usually D or E.
And exactly. And I have to agree with you completely with that whole idea of the Matrix downgrading reality and saying it's not real. This is more real over here. I have to agree with you completely where it's more of they're both real.
Right.
Because if you're in the Matrix, you know, one of the things that they said is if you die, the body still reacts. You can actually die in real life.
Right.
And how can it be less real if it can still cause that level of influence on your body and your brain and everything else?
Well, what they're saying in that case is that your body believes that the death is real, which your body responds by really dying outside the matrix.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that we create our own reality. We create what is real. Whatever we believe is real becomes real to a great degree.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about in the past lives episode. Our perception of us in that physical form is done with in that particular way.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe that we die as it does in the matrix. It says, you know, that's a very, I guess that's kind of an existential kind of point of view that the matrix takes there.
Kind of like if you're disconnected, you're gone and you're just evaporating to nothingness.
Right, exactly, yeah. They never, ever address in the Matrix the afterlife. I don't want to say that outside of the Matrix itself, in the real world, as they called it,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that was analogous to the afterlife at all. I wouldn't even say Zion was analogous to the afterlife. I would say that that was more analogous to the control that you have from the spirit realm, maybe very on a very limited scope.
The amount of influence your conscious mind can actually project into your life.
Right, right, exactly.
Going back to part of where we got our name, Take the Red Pill, the whole point right there where he had come so close to finding out the secrets of this mythology of people on the internet or whatnot, he met a few people and it's just like, okay, things are getting really weird now. And then all of a sudden, he had that choice. You know, I believe no matter what we do, the power that we always have is choice. Where he was given the choice of you take the red pill and you see how far down the rabbit hole goes, or you take the blue pill and you wake up tomorrow and you believe whatever you want to believe about what this was.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone presented with that choice may not take the red pill. They may take the blue pill. Like, this is too crazy for me. I must be on some kind of weird acid trip and I'm ready to wake up now.
I think that the red pill, blue pill scene in that movie was analogous to a shamanic awakening in a way. Anyone who you've known who's gone through one of those has their reality has just been turned completely inside out.
Oh, yeah.
And then that's when they see the reality beyond the reality. The interesting thing is to address another movie, which is Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Star Wars, I didn't think was extremely analogous as far as metaphysical stuff, except for the purveying idea of the Force.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Force, the Jedi Knights did not seem to have to go through any shamanic experience. They had to understand and accept and be able to find validity in the idea of the Force. The Force worked whether you believed in it or not. Their accepting of it and understanding of it allowed them to manipulate it.
Yeah, they had to free their mind and overcome their internal attitudes and blocks of what the Force was and what was possible. You know, similar to the Matrix, where Luke Skywalker is there talking to Yoda and he crashed into the swamp, and you know, Yoda's sitting there saying, "Raise the ship," and it's like, "That's impossible. Use the Force." I'm like, "Look, I'm just started. I don't really know a whole lot." Then he's like, "All right. I'll try." And like, "No." You know, try not, do or do not. Things along those levels where Star Wars was so good, it was a matter of saying, look, if you don't believe you can do something, then you're probably not going to be able to do it. Whereas if you do believe that you can do something, believe it with all of your being. And if there's something in you that's keeping you from believing it, find that, take care of it, and move on.
That quote that you just said of his, do or do not, there is no try. To me, one of the best quotes about the power we have in and of ourselves, I don't think that's restricted to Star Wars or Yoda. I believe that is very true. It's like I was once at a kind of a learning seminar type thing, and the facilitator walks up and he says, "Here, try to pull this pen out of my hand." The person would take the pen and they'd say, "Okay, really try as hard as you can." And they would pull it out of his hand and he would say, "I didn't ask you to pull the pen out of my hand. I asked you to try." So he'd say, "Try again." And then, of course, they would just use very feeble efforts. And he'd say, "Come on, try harder, higher, harder." And they wouldn't do it. Finally, when they pulled it out, he'd go back to the same thing. And I think it kind of paints a really great illustration of the Force. What would you say the Force is? What would you compare that to, that analogy?
I think the Force is just a complete openness to a lot of psychic ability that people have, such as telekinesis, clairvoyance, intuition. It's intuition on a whole nother level. And one of the things that I liked that they did with the whole Star Wars universe is they explained a little bit of why the Force is stronger with some people and it's and not with others, with the whole level midichlorian levels, which is some thing in your blood. And I think the Force is just one of those things where you're more in tune with your higher self and you're more open to what is possible in this reality. How about you?
From my understanding from the movies was the Force just is that essence that permeates all things and all life and all matter and all everything.
Mm-hmm.
That the Force is what gives existence its existence.
Hmm.
I personally thought the Force was analogous to God, if you will, or all that is, or the source, or whatever you want to call it.
There is another movie, Phenomenon, with John Travolta, where all of a sudden he started to develop a lot of psychic abilities where he could, especially with telekinesis, being able to move things with his mind. And one of the scenes he's asked, well, how do you do that? His explanation is, I ask it to move and it moves.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a really good example of what people see you as a role in the whole human community. And what you see as what you project out can be a little bit different. That one sentence right there where he's basically saying, I don't really do much. I just simply say, move. And I'm surprised that it moves. And other people are going, oh, wow, that is the most amazing thing in the world. I would love to be able to do that. And, of course, that specific movie, he ended up having a tumor and everything, and that was what was pressing on certain parts of his brain and giving him all these abilities. Which, you know, I thought kind
sounds
of
sounds like
sucked.
A buzzkill to me.
It was.
He's doing all this amazing stuff. Let's give him a tumor. Let's really, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it totally was. But
thanks,
I mean,
Hollywood.
Yeah, I think this was back in the early to mid 90s. So, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
I think with The Matrix, with Star Wars, and with Phenomenon, and even some other movies, what they were trying to say as one of their messages. What is possible to accomplish in this reality is far more magical when you actually open yourself up to the possibility of it being, and then you start seeing the magic of life happening all around you, and people start seeing the magic around you happening. You start not coming off as exactly the same type of person as everybody else. You know, most people, you know, they wake up in the morning like, ugh, I gotta go to work. They go to work like, ugh, work sucks. Then they get to come home like, ugh, I'm finally home. Yay. What am I doing? I'm gonna watch some TV. Okay. If a majority of people have that kind of existence, and then they see people out there that are, you know, like Richard Branson, you know, they see him like, well, he's flying off and he's doing all this stuff, and that would be cool if I had money. And like, well, why is the having more money not possible in your perception?
So what you're saying is that these movies give us the idea that these things are possible for many people. Is that what you're saying? Because, I mean, you talked about the person going home kind of talking about life as drudgery, and then look out and see that Richard Branson seems to be an exception. That's something outside of themselves as far as what's possible. Is that what you're talking about? This sounds kind of like it ties back to the law of attraction stuff that we talked about.
If you're coming home and your life feels lackluster, and then you see somebody else and you hear stories about them and you find their life more exciting, it's more of a perception of why is their life seem more exciting than your life? Is it possible for you to actually have that level of excitement in your life? Not necessarily being a billionaire or whatever, but still having that feeling. These movies, one of the things that they do is they put the seed of thought into people who see them where what if you don't have to make a huge, gigantic change or shift in your perception to accomplish what you want to accomplish? What if all you have to do is just move it just the slightest bit one way or the other, and then so much more opens up to you after that?
You know, what you're talking about is really interesting. Here's synchronicity for you. I'm going to give you an example of synchronicity. It's beautiful. I just started listening to a podcast called Interspeak Soul Adventures.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started listening to it end of last week. I plugged in my iPod today to sync, and there was a brand new episode.
Oh,
the
wow.
Episodes come out only once a week. And there was a brand new episode this morning, and I was like, I pulled it down. And it was called Get the Picture. And I was like, what? Okay. I didn't know what it was about. I just popped it in. It was brand new today. I listened to it today. Get the Picture is a book written by a gentleman named Brent Marchant.
Mm-hmm.
The subtitle is Conscious Creation Goes to the Movies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is today. The premise of his book, and what he does is he has a love for movies, great love for movies. So he wrote this book about all these movies going back to the 40s all the way up to today. And he mentions Phenomenon. He mentions a couple others. Premises, the ideas and analogies and examples of conscious creation in movie themes, in how we create our own reality and how that theme is carried through in these very many movies. So I'm really curious to check out this book.
Talk about synchronicity.
Talk about synchronicity, considering you and I have had this planned out for weeks.
Oh, yeah. This topic has definitely been there for a while.
Going into it, we knew what we were going to be doing it this week for, you know, the last couple of months. And here it comes, you know, manifestation. Ooh.
I can see that happening very well, because have you ever gone to like a really awesome action movie where they had a lot of martial arts and stuff like that? And, you know, you come out of the theater and you're just, you might be with your friends or whatever, and you're just kind of like doing these little martial arts, like, hoy, hoy, I'm like, I ninja kick you, and like, but I'm not going to hurt you. If there's a movie that can give you even an idea of being able to come out of your shell a little bit, you know that you're not a kung fu master like you saw in the movies, like, you know, Chuck Norris, because Chuck Norris is awesome and rocks completely, but as far as martial arts. For that little time when you're sitting there watching these movies, you get drawn into it. Your brain is able to lose track of reality for just a moment and totally be in this fantasy. I think that's what happens a lot with some of these other movies, like The Matrix, with Star Wars, with Phenomenon. You come out of the theater, there's this feeling of, wow, that was a really good action movie. If it really grabbed you, if it really spoke to you on some level, then you start going, huh, is it really possible to change your perception just a little bit? So instead of being able to jump 5 feet in the air, you can jump 8 feet in the air.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
If you're able to make that little bit of a jump, you know, a little bit of a shift, all part of you can start going, well, I personally can do X. I can do this much in this area.
Are you saying you like when these type of movies do this?
I'm saying more specifically, it's changing the perception of people of what is possible, and that change in perception then leads people to bigger dreams and more goals that they are then able to express more of their personal talents.
So you're talking about the potential effects from these kind of movies existing. You're talking about the ability for these movies to open up our perception of what's possible.
Oh, totally.
Is that what you're saying?
Completely.
Okay.
Completely.
Okay.
We'll take the TV show Heroes. Mm-hmm. They had so many little special powers with each little character coming out this way and that way. One of the things that I had never actually heard of that I saw in one episode was muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
The power that this person had, they could watch anything or they could see anything. Like they could see 5 minute clip of Bruce Lee, and then their body could instantly and automatically do Bruce Lee as well as Bruce Lee, if not better.
Mm-hmm.
What if you're not very physically or athletically inclined? You don't want to go out and exercise because you don't want people to look at you and think, oh, wow, you're really bad at this. With this, you can start saying, look, okay, I may not be able to go out and bat 1,000, but I can still go out and I can have fun at the batting cage and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can actually say, oh, I'm going to pretend, I'm going to imagine myself watching a few people batting. And then when I'm out there and I go to the batting cage, I'm going to see if I can actually take a little bit of that feeling of what I was seeing and see if I can actually put that into practice while I'm actually batting and see what happens and see if there's any change or effect. At that point, you're no longer worrying about people saying, oh, wow, you're really bad. You're like, let's see if this works. This could be fun.
Well, what's the danger of people slipping into a fantasy realm? In other words, they watch Heroes and they see the powers of some of these people, like the cheerleader who
mm-hmm.
could instantly heal and was nigh invulnerable. And sorry, watched the Ticks too many times. He's nigh invulnerable. Then where's the danger? Isn't there a danger of some people saying, you know what? If these things sort of things are possible, then I can, you know, not break my arm if I slam it into a brick wall. Or is it the backdrop that allows them to differentiate between, you know, there are these genetic experiments going on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that allows mm-hmm. them to differentiate between what's real and what's not. Because I know what you're saying, and I like what you're saying about movies mm-hmm. and themes opening up the human potential and human possibilities and expanding what we're able to do as a species. I mean, like we talked about in previous episodes, the nature of reality, they didn't have phones 500 years ago, and it was witchcraft. Yeah. Where now it's just like, hey, what's your number, you know? So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think with everything, there's always a danger of overdoing it. You can overdo eating, you can overdo exercising, you can overdo a fantasy, you can overdo imagination. Everything can be taken to such an extreme where it becomes unhealthy.
I like to think of what you're talking about as more of it folding into the perception of reality as far as what we're capable of. And I think most people don't watch TV and say, I'm going to try that. Hopefully they don't. Hopefully they're raised better. But maybe like what we talked about in an earlier episode of Star Trek, the iPad to me is those computers they worked on the bridge and stuff like that. They kept pulling up those diagnostics. To me, that's an iPad now.
Oh, yeah.
That was, what, almost 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. The iPad, granted, did not show up 10 years ago, but you know what I mean? The seed was planted till eventually we could kind of start easily incorporating it into our reality. It's kind of like the human beings like to sink into a warm tub slowly. You know, it ouch when you jump in there, but if you sink in slowly, you get used to it.
That goes in line exactly with what you're talking about with if people never have seen such things as this on like TV or movies or read it in books or whatever, I think it'd be harder for them to find the value if these products actually came out, if these products were actually being able to be imagined and created in the first place.
Right.
What you said with the telephone, you know, you go back 500 years, nobody's heard of a telephone. You could say, wouldn't you like to talk to somebody clear across the world? They may look at you like, I don't know anyone across the world. So no, that has no value for me. But then all of a sudden,
well, just Columbus, but I don't want to talk to him. Yeah. Smallpox spreader and all sorts of indigenous people armor.
Nobody liked him anyway. That's why we tried to send him away, but he kept coming back.
Yeah, I know. And now he gets a federal day.
Pop culture brings out these ideas of, oh, hey, what if we could talk to somebody on the other side of the world? Or I would love to have a computer that I'm able to carry around like a notebook, and I can do all my work and stuff on it, and I just click and have things pop up and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You see things like that, and all of a sudden it plants the seed of, that would be so cool to have. Few years, few decades later, we have it. We know the value of this technology, of these tools, because we've seen them in one form of another in pop culture, in movies, in TVs, in things of this nature.
Well, you know, the beauty of what you're saying and all that is that, you know, the imagination is the wellspring of what's possible. That's the imagination. If you can imagine it, then it's possible, period. And I think the beauty of TV and movies is that it gives you such a near real visual, virtual context to have it in. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, books, you can imagine things very vividly and they're very rich in and of themselves. But television, it allows you to see it in great detail and really have it even that more tactile. Maybe it helps accelerate the acceptance of its potential becoming a reality.
Going back to the 80s, the movie Tron, that was an awesome, awesome movie. I was a lot younger then, so I liked blue and they all shined blue. And
I understand they're remaking that.
I've seen a couple of trailers and it looks kind of interesting, but I'd have to see the movie because I'm kind of a Tron purist at the moment.
Yeah, it's probably a time and place thing for you.
If it's good, then I'll be like, okay, this is good. They've done a decent job. They didn't mess it up. They didn't lose track of what the original Tron was. They just updated it, and that would be awesome. If they say, we have so much more technology, we're just going to put all kinds of special effects, and who cares about the story?
CGI the crap out of it, yeah.
Yeah, well, they have to do that anyway because it's based in the computer. With Tron itself, that goes along with the same lines as The Matrix, Star Wars, and a few other movies where the whole idea is a majority of the movie takes place inside a computer. You realize that this character right here is a program, and their whole function is to make this happen. And this person's a character, and their whole purpose is to make certain something else happen. And then all of a sudden you have a programmer, which to a program is God.
Yeah.
They're in the same level as all the other programs. Where one of the programs asks the programmer, Flynn, I think his name was Flynn, he said, "Don't programmers always know what they're doing?" It kind of brings it back to, no, nobody always knows exactly what they're doing and exactly how they're going to create things. It's literally a creative exercise to see what works and what doesn't. At the same time, what was the effect of having a programmer working with all these programs for a certain goal? It took the ideas out of, I'm a program that I can only do X. Like, oh, wait, if you're a programmer, then I can see you doing this and I can actually get a little bit of code or inspiration, and then I can now join you in your quest to accomplish taking down the MCP.
I don't know what the MC is.
Master Control Program. So, okay. And it goes along with the other movies of there's people that can inspire you and you can work with their inspiration. They can help bring you up. And then there's also the looking at the world through different eyes, like through the eyes of Matrix. I'll tell you, I had a lot of people that I talked to, and I had a pretty large social group back then when that movie came out. There were some people that got so much into the idea of the Matrix, a couple of people saying, you know, this is how I see the world. This is how I think it really is. I can totally see how we could be in this fantasy world and this is a real thing.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to earlier, is that kind of danger. Not to question your friends and the people you choose to hang out with. You think, is that just kind of an escapism attitude, or are they just kind of a conspiracy theorist? Is it a personality thing? That's what I wonder about. That gravitates those people to really want to say that, yeah, I'm trapped in a computer simulation.
I have no idea. This was basically an acquaintance with, you know, hanging out with a bunch of other friends at the same time. So I didn't know them very well, but I did know them a little bit. I mean, the way that they said it was so deadpan. They didn't say it was a joke or smile afterwards. That didn't last very long. They came to their senses, you know, after a little bit of time. But at the same time, one of the best things that TV and movies and books can do is not only entertain, but inspire. Inspire and motivate people to be more than they believe they can be. Inspire a whole new form of technology. Inspire a whole new way of interacting with other people. I think that is one of the biggest, most awesomest things that pop culture and TV and movies and books can actually offer, is that inspiration.
For me, I agree with that to the degree that it just depends on what you choose. And people do choose what they gravitate to.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, like I told you earlier, with some exception, I don't care for dystopia themes, because to me that instills a hopelessness. So granted, you know, the earth is blown up, there's three people on it, there's nothing but dust around, and this guy, you know, with a shotgun can overcome adversity. And I understand there's the kernel of hope in there, but I'm like, how much hopelessness did it take to get to the point where that's what it took to generate hope? You know, so I don't really care for dystopian movies. I don't care for movies of excessive violence. I'm like, Last Man Standing. I'm like, really? Really? Come on. I think there were three words spoken in that movie, and the rest of it was just gunfire. And I'm like, I don't really understand. There's nothing inspirational to me about those kind of movies. But I know many people that are entertained by those movies, with anything with Bruce Willis in it, personally, like they talk about in this podcast they listen to, with actually the exception of Sixth Sense. And that's actually another one of those brilliant movies that talks about paranormal.
Oh, yeah. M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, M. Night Shyamalan. I didn't see too many of his movies, but that one really stood out for me. So, you know, I really kind of pick and choose based on what I think it's going to do, you know, if it inspires me or if I can feel compassion. But the dystopia, the violence, the negativity, see, that's my concern about what Hollywood or what people will pay their money to see that can have the potential of doing.
I think that's where your personal choices comes in big time. I have to admit, I have one movie that it came out mid to late 90s called Frequency. This is an awesome movie, in my opinion, and I still love it to this day. But it does have kind of a dark tone to it, and there is a little bit of violence, not a huge amount of violence, but it's definitely there. the whole idea is this shortwave radio that this kid's dad had, who died as a firefighter years and years ago. He actually brings it out one night and turns it on to see if it works during an aurora borealis of the northern lights going crazy, and ends up going back for talking to his dad 40 years ago. One reason why I love this movie so much is because it comes into this whole idea of morality, of ethics. As a son, knowing what happens to your dad and knowing how you turned out as a result, do you then tell him what's up? Tell him, give him the 411? You know, let him know, oh, you know, you should do this or this is going to happen. If the father follows the advice, that one thing could change everyone's life enormously. Mm-hmm. That's one of the ideas that I just absolutely loved with the whole idea of messing with time.
Yeah.
Working with time and messing with time and being able to go back in time or at least contact the past.
Well, you know who you're talking to here, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And that's another interesting thing that you just brought up there, are movies that address the aspects of time. I love those movies because they seem to always illustrate how much control we have over our reality.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of time, I think of movies and shows that kind of have a multiple timeline theme,
mm-hmm.
you know, like The Quantum Leap and Sliders and have you seen Flash Forward? It's
oh yeah,
new...
oh yeah,
yeah. Those shows
they canceled.
They canceled Flash Forward.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't record anymore. I'm.
Yeah, I know.
I have to go mourn. I have to grieve. You know what? I knew they were going to cancel it because it was too good. It's just, you know,
exactly.
There wasn't six guys sitting around in a coffee shop complaining about their inability to get a date. And I'm like, well, then it's not going to last.
You know what? Yeah, one of my other shows that came out a few years ago, Journeyman.
Oh, Journeyman was a great show. That was a great show. I like those shows because they do one of two things. Number one, they tell you that the future is not set in stone.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people talk about fate. You know, I believe that you can be kind of on a timeline. We've talked about that in the time episode.
Mm-hmm.
To know that the future is completely malleable and completely within your control, based on your present choices, like you talked about earlier.
Oh yeah.
I like that message, and I also like the message, like Journeyman says, if you decide to go back in the past and fix something, and this is another Quantum Leap thing that mm-hmm. Quantum Leap doesn't address that Journeyman did, is if you go back in the past, you know, like people say, you know, if I could do it all over again. I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking about something in my past that I was just like, really? That was a really, really ridiculous, short-sighted, stupid thing to do 20 years ago. And
we all have
it was one of those
moments.
You know, smack yourself in the head. Like, what the hell were you thinking? And then I said, okay, let me do this. Let's play this out to where I made a completely different set of choices.
Mm-hmm.
Who I am today is null and void.
Oh, yeah.
It's completely null and void. Personally, I like who I am today. The time travel to me also illustrates live with your experiences, you know, and let them create who you are and go mess with the timeline and boom, you know, Sliders. They couldn't even get back where they're going, you know.
Oh, yeah. Sliders was, oh, I fell in love with that show big time. When it was on, I loved Sliders because...
Is it just because Jerry O'Connell looked, you know, so good compared to Stand By Me?
No. But no, one of the things I loved about Sliders is they basically slid into a world where one thing in history had changed. One thing was different. The Russians won, took over the world, or the Nazis took over the world, and how everything had changed from that one little difference.
Mm-hmm.
The Cubs actually have won every World Series since 1952.
Right, yeah.
You know, one little thing changes like that.
That changes everything, kind of like the butterfly story.
Except the butterfly effect, totally.
I don't know if the butterfly effect is the same as the actual short story about the guy who travels back in time. There's a time machine. They have to stay on a path
mm-hmm.
because they cannot affect anything. He accidentally steps off the path and steps on a butterfly by accident and kills it. And this is like millions of years in the past or something, really far back in the past. He steps on this butterfly, comes back to the future, and it's completely dystopian.
Oh, yeah. I think The Simpsons played with that a little bit. Where
yeah, they did. They did a great job. One Homer, of my favorite episodes of all time.
Yeah, Homer is in a time machine, and I think he killed a bug or something, and then they come back, and the dinosaurs never died. They just morphed into humans right now or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly, but...
Yeah, that was fantastic. They did a great job.
Oh, I loved that episode.
The time travel, I like the point that it does make as far as, you know, not wanting to do it all over again, or realizing that what seem to be the most insignificant things, the tiniest choices you make can have the greatest effect. The butterfly flapping its wings causing a hurricane in Chile. You know, I don't remember how the thing goes. I like when those themes of the multiple timelines illustrate that very thing. I really have always appreciated that in TV and movies. I don't know. Did you ever read the Dune series?
Oh, Dune. Oh, my goodness. Dune was... We're talking about the original...
The original Dune. The trilogy. Dune Messiah, and Children of Dune.
No, I actually just saw the movie. I tried to watch the Sci-Fi Channel's remake of it, and I couldn't get past the first half hour because it was terrible.
Really? The David Lynch version of Dune was... I think I dry heaved for 6 days after that, but but I liked the sci-fi version because they were truer to the story. What they didn't go into, Paul Muad'Dib, he was the Messiah, basically.
Mm-hmm.
He got to a point where, because he was the Messiah, he could see every single possibility that would unfold in his future.
Mm.
He was able to see every timeline and every effect that every decision he made, he could see the effect far-reaching, I mean? He knew what step would create what effect through the entire future and all the way, I mean, to the humanity.
Mm-hmm. To the very end.
To the very end. And as a result, he had to live this so controlled life.
Mm-hmm.
He was so afraid of a misstep, of changing this timeline, and he felt trapped and he was enslaved by this timeline. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people feel like that in their own lives. I don't want to create this, so I can only make these choices. They give up their free will. The fourth book, God Emperor, this God Emperor had the same ability, but instead what he did was he said, you know what, this is the goal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to do what I'm going to do. I'm not going to be a slave to the timeline. I'm just going to know that basically if this is my goal, I can make a myriad of choices, always knowing that this is the goal, and I'm just going to let it unfold as it's going to unfold. And I thought that was kind of a beautiful analogy in those books. I lost interest after that one, but
I think that's where a lot of people get stopped up. Where they get stuck is they get to a point where they may have made a number of what they consider bad choices.
Groundhog's Day as an example.
Yeah. One day to be absolutely perfect and win the love of a lady who the day before hated your guts. That's kind of impressive right there. I think a lot of people actually get stuck where they've made so many bad mistakes, they're afraid to make any other mistakes, and therefore don't do anything. They can't make any successes, they can't make any mistakes, they're just stuck.
Right.
I think to some degree, certain TV and movies talk to different people at different points in their life to possibly help get them unstuck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying this is definitely a positive thing about it. And like with Groundhog Day, if I remember correctly, wasn't there like 6 to 9 months where he did the same day over and over again so he could learn the piano and try different things left and right so that he could impress Andy McDowell?
Well, his goal was to impress her. I think he had to make the ultimate right choice before he could get out of the Groundhog Day.
Do you remember how many days he went over and over and over again?
Countless. I couldn't tell you. I'm going to have to watch it and count to see how many times he went through that day.
I remember he did not know how to play the piano. And then at the very end, he could play the piano magnificently.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a very long time.
You know, I would like to say, I love analogies in movies, mm-hmm. you know.
Oh, yeah.
On a spiritual level, almost. Groundhog Day, to me, was an analogy. It was an analogy of, I don't want to call it hell, but I would say it's an analogy of what might happen in between lives, reliving an experience, trying it different ways. There's other movies like Jacob's Ladder. Mm-hmm. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
That, to me, was an analogy of really trying to work through the hell that you've created. And really being able to move on after that. Short premise of it is he was in the Vietnam War. After coming home, reality really starts to kind of slip. He can't really tell what's what. He had a son that had died. He's really kind of losing grip with the loss of his son, the experiences of Vietnam. He just can't tell what's real and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good story as far as that analogy goes, you know, battling your demons and trying to really figure out what's really important to you, those kind of things.
So you think probably the in-between times of in-between lives is a review of every possible choice that we could have made at every given second, like Groundhog Day, for every single day of that we had lived? Or is that just more of the possibility that you could see?
I could see that, you know, maybe the soul at some point says, you know what, I really want to go through this process and find out what choices really make this particular impact. And I'm going to keep going through it until I find out what it was.
Well, let's say Groundhog Day. Couldn't you go through the same thing infinitely to try every little possible thing differently?
If you wanted to, you know, I think the soul's a little bit...
Where does the soul say, okay, I've learned enough?
Well, I think the soul says, you know what, I want to see kind of where this goes to a degree. And I don't know, there's probably more of a point to that. It's nice to think that maybe in the afterlife we have the option to explore what those other timelines are or what those other choices are. Mm-hmm. I do believe that we do in the afterlife get to learn what the impact of our choices are.
Oh, yeah.
I do believe we get to experience the effect that we had on the lives that we touched. I like the illustration of that idea in Groundhog Day.
For me personally, I have always had a very difficult time of knowing what kind of an effect I have on others. This may sound really weird to people that have met me. I just have never had a good sense of the impact that I have on other people.
But the thing is you have to take into account choice. A person is going to do what they do with whatever interaction you have with their life. Once you interact with them, it's like releasing the bird. Your actions are going to fly off and do what they do, and because everybody else will have their choice on how they deal with it. Let me give an example. There's a homeless guy laying on the street, and he says, can I have $5? And you say, here's your $5. Maybe he went and got himself a sandwich. Maybe he went himself got himself a bottle of Mad Dog.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, how do you feel about having done that? So really, that's the bottom line more than anything. If he did indeed get a sandwich, if you did not give him that $5, granted, he couldn't have gotten his booze, but also he couldn't have gotten his sandwich.
Yeah, it's like that line in Star Trek First Contact. Riker is sitting there and saying, you're going to be this great person and whatever. And he's like, that's too much pressure. I can't be a great person. And then he says, don't try to be a great person. You know, just do what you do and let history decide.
Right.
I think that's along the lines of what you're saying, where the impact that we have on other people's lives, we have to be true to ourselves. We have to live the way we believe that we need to live and do the things that we need to believe that we need to do. And then the impact that we have on other people's lives, they will make that decision on their own.
Absolutely. That's the bottom line with that.
That's a pretty powerful thing to say, because you can get to a point where you may get so worried about making a negative impression on some people that you don't do a whole lot.
Then you're gauging your actions on what someone's perception is of you. And once again, there's that book, What You Think of Me Is None of My Business. That's not being true to yourself. That's being true to what you want other people's perceptions to be of yourself. And how fair is it to really tell a person what they should think of you?
Exactly.
Did I talk about this before?
I don't remember you talking about it before.
No, not to get too tangential, but I love this kind of stuff. If somebody says to you, you know what? I want you to like this person. I want you to think this person's a great guy. Wouldn't you be offended? Wouldn't you be like, wait a minute, I'm going to feel about that person the way I feel about him. And I don't want to be told what I should think of a person, because I have the right to feel about anybody the way I feel about him. So then why is it that we expect and want everybody else to like us? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, yeah.
To want people to like you, but to expect people to like you and make your decisions based on the assumption that they really should like you, when it's their choice, they have as much right to feel about you as you do to feel about somebody else.
Oh, exactly.
So it's a double standard to me to say, you know what, everybody should like me, but I don't have to like everybody.
I know. There are people that are like that, where they have such a fear of conflict. I have to admit, I suffered from this from a long time myself, where so afraid to step on somebody's toes, even though I knew all this stuff of you can't please everybody all the time, but at the same time, you don't want to offend people as much as possible. it wasn't until I became more confident in who I was, where I was not as worried about offending people as I had been in the past. I took more of a new idea of the people that are going to love me are going to love me, and the people that don't, they'll go and love somebody else, and that's just fine with me.
You know where I tie this back to the movies?
Oh, how you do that?
You've reminded me of the movie, we've talked about it before, Defending Your Life.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that a lot of the premise of that movie is a lot of what you're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm. The whole idea of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Defending Your Life with Albert Brooks and Meryl Streep. That's still one of my all-time favorite movies. The whole premise of the movie is the whole goal of living life on Earth is to overcome your fear. And when you overcome your fear, then you get to move on in the mechanism of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's this whole thing of, you know, using a certain percentage of your brain and using more of your brain than less of your brain. And that has to do with not so much intelligence, but a matter of how much you've overcome fear. That probably was one of those reasons why I like that movie so much, is because for a long time I was in that place.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a very difficult time getting out of that place.
And that spoke to you really on a profound level as a result of that, huh?
Oh, yeah. And there would be times where I would watch that movie every so often. I'd be remembered, oh, yeah, fear. Fear is a mind killer from Dune.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, let's not act out of fear of offending somebody. I tried that way for so long, and it just didn't work. It wasn't until I got the whole confidence that that was no longer an issue.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's why movies and TVs and books that are able to inspire people to do something, to move, to take a little bit of a risk here, a little bit of a risk there, do something a little over here that you may not have normally done, but it's not death-defying or anything. Get to that point and you find out, you're like, oh, I accomplished that. Oh, mm-hmm. I have more confidence in my ability now. Let's try this little thing over here. Oh, I accomplished that too. Sweet. Mm-hmm. That yeah. builds up your confidence, and it gets you to that point where you have more and more success. It may have all started from one or two, maybe three movies, or a book, or TV show, or a combination of all those things put together that led you into that whole road of getting more confidence.
Confidence is embracing what's possible and allowing yourself to move toward it. That's why I love science fiction movies, and that's why I love those genres of that talk about what's possible, and like the movies we talked about today. I just love that.
So what would be your final word on spiritual and metaphysical ideas in TV and movies and books?
There's nothing wrong with entertainment. I think it's beautiful to be entertained. And I think it's an interesting thing to do, to kind of do a self-check
mm-hmm.
and see what it is, what resonates with you. And that'll tell you a lot about your perspective on life and who you are and kind of how you see life and other human beings and yourself in general
mm-hmm.
is by looking at the movies that really resonate with you. If movies of hope resonate with you, do you have a sense of hope?
Mm-hmm.
If movies of hopelessness resonate with you, do you have a sense of hopelessness? If movies of violence resonate, do you just feel like, you know, kicking the crap out of everybody you know? You know, so that's kind of what I would say about that. How about you?
I think that movies, TV, and books, one of the amazing powers that they have is to change the perception of what is real and inspire people to try something different, try something they may not have done, or take a leap of faith towards a goal that they want, but they may not have felt able to do so. That is what I think the most powerful aspect of TVs and movies and on a metaphysical, spiritual nature have on us as humans.
Oh, very nice. This week for Take the Red Pill, we want to thank everyone for listening and tuning in and keeping up with us. Don't forget to feel free to leave comments on our page or taketheredpillpodcast.com or give us feedback one way or another. We always welcome it.
For dondalton.com, I am Donald Dalton, wishing you a life fantastic.
And I am David Deere. Look out for what's possible.